I'm Robin Lustig, in for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Don't switch channels, don't walk out of the room. Just for a moment, stop what you're doing and listen to this.
I've proposed a new economic plan for America.
John Kerry says he'll raise taxes, but only on the rich.
One of the most important parts of the reform agenda is to encourage people to own something.
If George Bush had told the truth a year ago, here's what he might have said.
My fellow Americans, we have no evidence that Iraq has stockpiles of weapons of mass destruction. No connection to 9/11.
Yes, the campaign ads. Whether you hate them or hate them, they are here, more of them than ever before, and there will be a lot more before campaign 2004 is over. Who's the man who values freedom, faith and family? Is he the same one who wants to know he's a husband, father and hunter? Which candidate offers values, conviction and vision? Do all the ads end up looking and sounding the same? An American election without ads is unthinkable. Yet in England, where I'm from, and in many other European nations, there are no paid-for political ads on TV, and somehow we do seem to manage. In fact, in Europe, election turnout is usually higher than in America. So could it be that the ads are actually turning voters away from politics? Someone once said that half of all the money spent on advertising, any advertising, is wasted. The problem is, no one knows which half. Do you pay any attention to the campaign ads? Have you or anyone you know ever changed your vote as the result of an ad? This hour on The Connection, we want to know what you think of the ads and the message that they're selling. 1-800-423-8255 is the number. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Well, joining me this hour from WNYC in New York is Adam Hanft. He's a marketing specialist and columnist with Inc. magazine. His firm, Hanft Unlimited, does brand advertising for companies like AT&T Wireless and Hertz. And joining me from KUSC in Los Angeles is Pacey Markman. He's a former Madison Avenue ad executive. He created ads for Coca-Cola and Miller Beer. And this election year, his firm, Zimmerman and Markman, is producing ads for Move On. Welcome to you both. Thanks for joining us on the show. Pacey Markman, let me start with you. A simple, perhaps naive question. Why do you do it?
Well, I really care. I've been very lucky over the last 12 years when I started this firm to only work on issues and for very few candidates who I really care about. And I have some passion and some experience, and I get to bring it to something I really believe in. I think it's really important to defeat this president.
Do you have any evidence that the work that you do, the ads that you create, make any difference?
Yes. Yeah. What's interesting about this year's campaign, especially the campaign we're doing for Move On, is that we've had the time and the money to really research the work we're doing. So we do something called market testing of almost every ad that we run. And let me just tell you what that is. We produce an ad, and we will do a poll in a city where we're going to run the ad. We'll do a poll before we run the ad, and we do a poll at the end of a week's run of the ad. And then we'll do a poll in a similar city, say Columbus and Akron, Ohio. And in that city, we won't run the ad, and we'll do a poll before and a poll after. So we'll be able to tell what's happening in the marketplace without our ad and what's happening in the marketplace with our ad. And then we'll look at the numbers, and we'll see whether we've moved Kerry's vote or we've if we've moved Bush's vote down. And then we only run ads at work.
And you are in no doubt that the evidence that you acquire that way does show you, beyond doubt, that the ads you make move people's opinions.
Yes, at that time.
Ah.
At that time. So I can tell you for the week that it runs, whether it holds and whether 3 weeks from now I have to come back with another ad to move them, that's a different story. But I can tell you that while the ads are working and for a period afterwards, that they're effective.
Adam Hanft, do you believe that campaign ads do make a difference to the outcome of a political race?
I think at one point they were far more influential. I think they have some role today, but I think the range of media inputs and the media outlets that people are seeking, whether they're cable news or blogging and websites where people are increasingly turning, has fragmented the market so much that TV advertising is less impactful and less dispositive than it has ever been before.
So what do you think, then, of the way in which ads are made now, the quantity of them, and indeed the quality of them?
I think there's a comfort factor that politicians have in advertising that looks and feels like other politicians' advertising, just like there's a comfort factor that marketers have in advertising that looks and feel like their competitors. As much as they may talk about wanting to be different, in most cases they're not. I think that's exacerbated in the political realm, and I think that's why virtually all political advertising, as you indicated in the lead, looks and feels the same. It's very much poll-driven, and it's very much done with a documentary film style most of the time, so that somebody goes out there and sees that their candidate is perceived to be weak on family values, and they run out and cobble together a family value spot and put it on the air in that kind of a very reactive fashion.
Pacey, what's the difference between what you do and what the Kerry campaign itself does, the kinds of ads that you produce?
Well, first of all, Adam, it's nice to have you on the radio. We worked together years ago.
Yes, we did.
Nice to reconnect on the connection. First of all, we're just doing a separate advertising campaign, and it's not coordinated with Kerry. But to get to what Adam was talking about, I absolutely agree that 90% of the political ads that are run announce themselves as political ads. Essentially are strategy statements that get filmed and don't do much. I'd argue that the advertising we do is very different. We approach political advertising exactly the way I used to approach doing advertising for a product. And by that I mean I'm aware of the medium I'm on. I'm on television. I know that a guy who's coming home in Ohio after a hard day's work and putting his kids to bed and sitting down after dinner is not saying to himself, God, I just hope there's some information tonight about Carrier Bush in between interrupting the Friends show that I'm watching or CSI Miami. And so the advertising I do has to be he's turning on television to be entertained, and the
right.
advertising I do has to be entertaining. And it has to move the person. It has to either be funny or sad or have some sense of movie making to it, the way good commercial advertising does.
Adam, do you have any problem with this idea? And it seems to be a given now throughout the American political world that politics is a product, that candidates can be sold, that voters exist in a marketplace, and that the principles underlying everything that is being done is exactly the same as trying to move a bottle of beer or a can of beans.
Well, I think that we're clearly in a place where the consumer economy kind of drives everything that we do in this country. In terms of whether or not I think it's a good thing, you know, there's been so much talk about this. I think on one level, this has really always existed in politics, but it probably hasn't been as articulated or as crystallized as it is today. I think Franklin Roosevelt was very aware of what his package was and what his brand was. I think Eisenhower was very aware, and certainly Kennedy and Kennedy's people, even though that was before the onslaught of TV advertising as we know it now, were very conscious about his brand and photo ops and how to package himself for the American people. They wrote, they being Arthur Schlesinger and Sorensen, wrote PT-109 as a campaign biography to build Kennedy's brand. So I really don't think this is anything new. I just think it's something that we've gotten more sophisticated about, and it's become much more part of the dialogue, but it's always been there. Lincoln had a brand, clearly, as well.
Basically, when you sit down and start creating a campaign ad, do you have a different set of considerations in your mind than when you do the same thing and sit down and try to create, I don't know, a new ad for Coca-Cola or something of that nature?
Well, I haven't done product advertising for a long time, but I will tell you the big difference between doing product advertising and political advertising is in product advertising. If over the course of an entire year I could move 1% or 2% of the people to buy my product, I get a huge bonus and I'm a hero. In political advertising, I've got to move 51% of the people to buy a product on a single day. That's incredibly different. And so the mindset is different. In product advertising, you have much more control of the marketplace, or the marketplace is much more static. Here, the marketplace, for us, the marketplace of ideas, is changing every day. News impinges on the campaign. What candidates say changes what's going on. Moves that a president can make, moves that a challenger makes, all affect Mindset of the person who sits down to watch the commercial. So all of those things are absolutely out of my control when I sit to do an ad today that's going to run in 2 or 3 weeks.
Okay, well, let's do a bit of market testing. We can take a call. Noah is on the line from Raleigh in North Carolina. Noah, what do you pay attention to the ads?
Well, I watch them because they're on, and it feels to me like they, for the most part, are kind of misleading by leaving out information, I guess. I feel like they're never very specific. They're just kind of saying, you know, I'm good and they're bad. Vote for me. I've always wanted to see some numbers really show up. Also, they make me angry a lot of the time.
Angry in what way?
I feel like they are assuming that the American people are just dumb.
Can you be specific, Noah? I mean, give me an example.
Okay. There was an ad that ran pretty early in the campaign. This is actually fairly crystallized in my mind. It's been a while, though. It's a Bush ad that says that John Kerry raised taxes on gasoline a number of times. And in the ad, it's got these cars. They're old, like Model Ts or something, going around in circles and fast forward with this kind of goofy music playing. And it made me really mad because this is the kind of advertising I really dislike, where they take things out of context and kind of shove it down our throats. And, you know, I look at that and I think, well, you know, when he raised those taxes, the price of gas probably wasn't $2 for unleaded. And just things like this. I wish that there would be more specifics. I don't trust somebody when they say, I'm going to make things better. I want to know how.
Okay.
And it's just never described in these commercials.
Okay, Noah. Well, Pacey, there you see. I mean, okay, just one reaction. I know in 30 seconds there's not much you can do, but at least there you've turned one, or somebody has turned one voter off.
Well, I didn't do that ad.
No.
That's the Bush people, and I'm glad he's turned off. That's really terrific.
Yeah, that's
and
a political judgment, not an advertising judgment.
I hope a lot of people were turned off. People always talk about how the public hates negative advertising.
Yeah.
And I think the public just hates bad advertising. And this guy's talking about a bad ad. And bad ads annoy people. And bad political ads annoy them as well.
Isn't that just another way of saying that people get annoyed by ads which don't look at the world the way they want to look at it, that are negative about a candidate whom they favor or who just simply take a different take on the world?
I think that's true, but we're talking about a set of voters which is increasing, peculiarly small this time, who haven't quite made up their mind who are persuadable from one side or the other. So they're not as polarized as the people you're talking about. I mean, this is a very polarized election in which about 90% of the people have already made up their mind, and they're very firm in their judgments about their people.
We're talking this hour about political ads. Are you tuned into the campaign commercials that you see on your TV screen? Have you ever changed your vote after watching an ad? 1-800-423-8255 is the number to call. I'm Robin Lustig. You're listening to The Connection on NPR. I'm Robin Lustig in for Dick Gordon. We're discussing this hour how the road to the White House is being fought increasingly through political TV ads, seen in living rooms across the country. Joining me this hour, Adam Hanft, who's a marketing consultant and brand advisor, and Pacey Markman, who's crafting ads for Move On. I also want to bring in at this point John Brabender, who joins us on the line from Washington, D.C. He's a Republican media consultant. His firm, Brabender Cox, is producing ads for Senate races in Louisiana, Oklahoma, and Illinois. John, thanks for joining us on the show.
Happy to be here.
We were just hearing from one caller who remembered a Bush ad early in the campaign, which he took violent exception to. It was alleging that John Kerry had voted for higher taxes on gasoline. He said it was unfair, didn't provide context. Can you defend it?
Well, first of all, I would highly suspect that viewer was probably predisposed to vote for John Kerry to begin with, and oftentimes when they see ads attacking their favorite candidate, they have a tendency to have that type of response. I remember the ad well. I think that it was an ad that did show specific votes and was credible in the sense of saying this is something that John Kerry did as a senator. It had a direct impact on voters, on their daily lives, and something that was an important element. But with that said, I want to agree with some of the things that were talked about before, and that is that really, you know, the impact of advertising on a presidential race, in my opinion, is relatively minimal compared to all the other activities that are going on in a presidential campaign.
Like what?
Well, for example, I cannot do an ad as good as one neighbor or one relative calling and telling another neighbor or relative, here's who I think you should vote for and why. I mean, grassroots politics will always sort of supersede what a political ad can do. Second of all, in a presidential debate, a presidential election where you have debates, you have so much earned media, every day there's news coverage and so forth, ads have a tendency to play a much smaller role in the ultimate decision-making process, as say they do in a lower-level race, a senator, congressman, governor, and all the way down the line.
John, there seems to be a widespread perception that campaign ads are just not very good, that they're dull, that they aren't, let us say, in any way as interesting to look at as product ads. Now, first of all, do you agree with that? And second, if you do, why do you think that's the case?
Oh, I think there's no doubt that that's the case. I like to say that most political ad is like fast food. You know, it's cooked up in a hurry. It smells and tastes the same all the time. And chances are, a little bit after seeing it, it's going to give you indigestion. And there's some good reasons and some bad reasons. Some of the reasons that the ads are so poor is when you compare them to commercial advertising, there just is not the same type of budgets. Oftentimes, we're talking about spending $10,000 to produce an ad versus $100,000 or $1 million to, you know, produce a commercial for you know, Coca-Cola, whoever, or even more. Second of all, there is the shelf life of a political ad. Generally speaking, it's about 1,000 gross rating points or what might be just a week during a campaign. Well, how much do you really want to invest in an ad that's going to be on for only a week versus somebody else who may run that ad for years? Third of all, the process itself, which I think is a faulty one, creates one of the biggest problems. You have pollsters, you have campaign managers, you have the campaign itself with the candidate and the media consultants. You put them all into a room, and there's no consistency of how to create ads. You have a pollster who might say, hey, you got to make sure these 5 points are in there. If they're in there, I'm happy with the ad. Well, most marketers will tell you that, you know, it's like throwing a tennis ball. If I throw 5 tennis balls at you, you're probably not going to catch any of them. If I throw one, you might. And so I think that we've created this system where we try to take a 30-second commercial and almost make it like a print ad and say, how much can we throw in there in 30 seconds? You know, we want to get our money's worth. And ultimately what happens is we throw way too much in there and it just passes the viewer by.
John, I have to ask you, given what you have just said, you don't think that political ads make a huge difference to the way people vote. You don't think by and large that they're very good. Why do you make them?
Well, first of all, I hope that I'm an exception, or at least that I'm one of the some firms that are an exception. I think that not all political ads are poorly done. I just think the vast majority are them done.
Okay, give us an example then of an ad that you have made that you think does break the rule.
Well, we did one for Senator Rick Santorum. He was running in 1994. He was an unknown congressman running statewide, and we were running on, at that time, cutting the deficit. And I remember we ran a series of 15-second commercials, and one showed our opponent and said, here's his approach to cutting government waste, and it showed a pair of a child scissors, and then it says, here's the Rick Santorum approach. And all of a sudden, it showed a chainsaw being started up, and it started to cut through this huge stack of paper in half, and it made the point that he introduced more bills to cut wasteful spending than any other congressman in Washington.
Okay, so you had an image there that was obviously a very striking image.
It was something that somebody could immediately see it, draw their attention, and understand exactly what the message that we were saying, and we could move on. I mean, you know, I believe very much that most advertising, not just political advertising, to some degree is an intrusion on people's lives. And there is a need to grab them. It's like when you open your mail. When you get a piece of mail, you look at it and you say, okay, is this something that's relevant to me? Is it something I want to open? Or am I going to throw this thing away? Well, people view a political spot or all advertising the same way. I have about 4 or 5 seconds to grab their attention through entertainment, humor, whatever the case may be, and say, yes, this is interesting to watch. Now I've also got to make it relevant to their life. And so, you know, that is the distinction. And I have seen many cases where advertising has moved a lot of numbers in political campaigns. So, you know, on a general level, I think that there are is a lot of bad advertising that does not move numbers, but I think it's very possible if you do it the right way.
Okay, let me come back to you, Adam Hanft. Are there ads which you regard as memorable, as good examples of what political ads can do and should do, and which you believe really did make a significant difference to the outcome of a race?
Well, I think an obvious example of that, and it's been talked about for years, is the Lyndon Johnson Daisy commercial, which only ran, I think, one time. But it was one time that made a profound impact on the electorate, because it had the guts to basically say that that Goldwater was a risk and was going to be fast and loose with the nuclear trigger.
It would be called a negative ad today, wouldn't it?
It would be called a negative ad, but it was a negative ad by much more intellectual standards, because it was more metaphorical, and the viewer had to have enough understanding about what the stakes were in order to impute that negativity to the message, which in and of itself was pretty benign. Mm. So it was a combination of a visual and what was in the viewer's mind that made that commercial work. It wasn't over-literalized the way so much advertising is today. Although I didn't particularly love it myself, I think the Reagan Morning in America work was very different than what we've been seeing recently, because it really took the president and almost treated him like a lifestyle brand.
A feel-good candidate.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, feel-good candidate, but not in a conventional way, because it tied so much to who his personality, what his personality was about, and how he was perceived. It was really not issue-driven. It was driven much more by kind of a loose set of attributes around the core DNA of who Reagan was. You know, one of the things that I think that we're looking at now is that Bush brand is very established in the marketplace, and that's a very different challenge for the president and his team than the Kerry brand, which is still in formation and much more amorphous. And that's really one lens through which we could look at this campaign. Although, as Pacey said, there's only 3 to 5% of undecideds left. And on one level, I question whether or not that is cast in stone, as some people might say. But in any case, we've got one brand that is very firmly established, giving the president much less room to work in, and we've got the Kerry brand that is much more wide open, which has its own risks attendant to it.
Okay, let's take another call. Kathy's on the line from Durham in North Carolina. Kathy, hello.
Hello.
Do you watch these ads?
Well, you can't help but watch them. They're, as you say, they're you're being bombarded by them every day. I usually, most of them just tune them out. My point I was going to make is that I agree that there is such a small group of undecideds in this particular election that I don't believe that many of these ads are really doing anything one way or the other. My point I was going to make was that the negative ads, I think, really come out and do what they're supposed to do right before the voting days come up. Ah. And it's more not so much to sway your opinion as it is to get you to show up at the polls. Jesse Helms here in the state of North Carolina was a master at doing this. Unfortunately, but he was.
Because what? It makes people scared of what might happen if the other guy got in?
Absolutely. That's exactly what he would do. He would wait and try and look like a nice guy till right to the very end of his campaigns. And if it looked like the polls were close, out came the most egregious negative ad you have ever seen. And it would scare people to go to the polls. And he'd kept winning.
Kathy, can I just...
I was just going to say, it also gives the opponent less time to answer, which is a classic part of that strategy. Mm.
Exactly.
I just wanted to do a little test, Kathy. I hope you don't mind. If I use the words values, conviction, and vision, does that immediately in your mind conjure up one candidate in this current presidential race rather than another one?
Not really.
So if I said that those three words had appeared in one candidate's campaign ad, you wouldn't be able to tell me which candidate?
No.
It's interesting.
Not really.
It's interesting. I mean, Pacey, isn't that part of the problem, that both candidates are appealing to the same, as you say, small group of undecided voters, and they are essentially selling the same product?
Well, I don't agree they're selling the same product.
They claim to be.
Well, yes and no. I'm not so sure. Yes, but basically what the product has two attributes. One, I will keep you secure, and two, I'll keep you prosperous, which is basically what every candidate who's run for president has run on, you know, peace and prosperity. And peace has a different frame this time because of 9/11 and the war in Iraq. So basically, it's an argument about who is better at that. And I guess to that extent, I would agree that they're saying similar things.
There was an ad, I think, it's a Kerry ad. It describes him as a husband, a father, a hunter, a hockey player. That's an extraordinary way to sell a political message, isn't it?
I think it was so opportunistic that it can't really stick in the marketplace. It was clearly focus group tested language, and clearly language that sought to elide his Senate career, which he's walking away from for obvious reasons, although I don't think the Republicans obviously are going to let him do it. But I think the public is very smart, and when they hear a litany of adjectives like that, they know exactly what is going on, and it doesn't work.
I'm interested in turnout, and I know that there's a lot of concern in this country that fewer and fewer people are voting, fewer than half of the eligible voters are now turning out to elect a president. In other countries where there is either less paid-for political advertising on TV or none, turnout tends to be higher. Now, Pacey, what lesson do you draw from that, if any?
Well, the first lesson is that it's not advertising's fault that there's low turnout. We have a very peculiar electing system in this country. We have an electoral college. And what it essentially does is it values some people's votes over other people's. And that's why I'm doing my ads in the what are called the swing states or the battleground states, and why the Bush people and those organizations who are supporting Bush are running them in exactly the same place and not running them in places where the election is already settled.
So I read somewhere that more than half of the states of the U.S. are not actually being targeted with these kinds of ads.
33 states are not. 33 states. So that means that if I'm a Bush voter in California, I'm essentially being told I don't count, it doesn't matter, my vote doesn't matter. And if I'm looking at the polls in California, say, on November the 1st, and it says that Kerry is still ahead by 10 or 15 points, absent some other race that might draw me, I might not go to the polls. I think that that is a much bigger problem and a much bigger factor in turnout, especially in a race like this.
So unless you live in a swing state, your vote is taken for granted. You are not really considered, at least by the campaign world, as an important part of this process.
That's right. Well, I was just going to say, I think that the turnout issue is partly what Pacey's talking about, but also the turnout problem exists on non-presidential elections, on local elections and so forth. So obviously it's not just people feeling the vote doesn't count. I think that if you look at demographically, young people don't vote in this country. And I think if you look at older people, our stats are pretty much on par with what's happening in Europe and other parts of the world. So I think the question is, why aren't young people being made part of the system? And I think in this election, we're seeing tremendous efforts through MTV and Puff Daddy's work and so forth to bring out that demographic cohort, as it's called. But I don't think it's really a universal issue. I think it's more of a demographic issue.
Okay, Elizabeth's on the line from Cape Cod, Massachusetts. Elizabeth, what line do you take on these ads?
Hi. I'm 21, so I guess I can speak for the demographic. It was just the ads that I see on television, I tend to think are pretty boring. But a set of ads that I did really like were the Bush in 30 Seconds ads that were run by Move On.
Oh, that was Move On, right.
MoveOn.org, yeah. And I don't watch too much television. I was glued to the internet, I suppose, watching these ads. I thought they were just fabulous, and they were, you know, engaging, hilarious, and I can understand why some of the ones I liked the most.
Okay, they were engaging and hilarious. Did they also say things that you agreed with?
Well, yes, this is true. Yes, they did.
But you considered them to be different to the other kinds of ads that you've seen?
Well, it was a competition where I believe, I'm not sure if I'm totally correct, they asked people to make ads and people sent them all in. Mm-hmm. So they were, people made these advertisements as opposed to sort of bigger organizations.
But, well, I mean, you liked them, you enjoyed them. Did they have an effect on the way that you think about the candidates and the way that you might vote in November?
No, I don't think they had too much of an effect on. But what I was most sort of interested in is that the ad that did win, which was an ad sort of attacking Bush and the debt that's going to be accumulating for future generations, I heard a story that it was not, it was going to be aired on the Super Bowl. That was sort of the point of the competition, I think. And then that the ad was then not allowed to run.
Okay, well, I expect Pacey can tell us about that. Pacey, here you have somebody who loved the ad, thought it was engaging and humorous, didn't shift her vote, though.
Well, because I would bet, you know, being from Massachusetts and listening there, she's probably a resolved Kerry voter, and I'm glad it didn't shift her vote. You know, one of the things, and Adam will tell you this, and I'm sure my Republican counterpart there will say the same thing. You know, if you go and ask people in focus groups where you gather groups of people together to talk about politics, or you ask people on the street, no one will ever cop to having changed a major decision because of an ad they saw. They just don't. Even when you're doing product advertising, when you show people commercials for products, they never say, oh, yeah, I would go buy the product because of that. What they'll say is, well, I think it would help change the mind of people I know, or might change other people's minds. So I think that there's a general reluctance on the part of people. And also, I think, a sense of a reality. They don't actually know that it's advertising that's helped change their decision, whether it's in a political campaign or whether it's buying a car. People will tell you, I bought a car because they did the research and I really looked at them and I, you know, did all the work. But if that were the only truth, there wouldn't be any car advertising.
Just briefly, John Brabender, before we go to a break, have you ever met anybody who's told you that they've seen one of your ads and it really shifted their vote?
Oh, without doubt. We've seen that in testing. And like I said, it happens more on a race that's not on the presidential level because they have much less information to decide their vote, and therefore the political advertising has a greater chance to have an impact on them.
Okay, we're going to go have a break now. Changing minds from TV to the ballot box is what we're talking about on The Connection this hour. Are political ads effective in influencing voters? Have you ever changed your vote after seeing an ad? 1-800-423-8255 is the number to call. 1-800-423-TALK. You're listening to The Connection on NPR. I'm Robin Lustig. This is The Connection. We're talking this hour about campaign ads, political messages, what you see on TV. Are the candidates products? Do you buy a candidate in the same way as you buy a product? My guests are Adam Hampft, who's a marketing consultant with clients like AT&T Wireless and Hertz, Pacey Markman, a former Madison Avenue ad executive who's created ads for both Miller Beer and Coca-Cola, and who this election year is producing ads for Move On. You can join our conversation, 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Adam, I was wondering, do people feel about candidates the same way they feel about products? They get quite emotionally involved sometimes with products. If you think about a car, for example, or a vacation venue, do they feel the same way about candidates?
I don't think they consciously articulate that they see their candidates as brands, but I think it's clear that they do relate to the persona of a candidate as they might relate to the persona of a brand. I also think that Pacey's right that people will always say the socially acceptable thing, which is I don't pay attention to advertising. But I think it's important to recognize that there are two levels that the presidential advertising works on. One is to sell the individual candidate. The other is to differentiate and define the party. And I think on that level, we don't really focus enough on the role of advertising, because the reason that somebody might say the Republicans are strong on defense, the Democrats are big spenders, is because of years and years and hundreds of millions of dollars being spent behind those messages by a variety of presidential candidates. That sticks. The reason people have articulated views about the parties is not because they spend a lot of time reading The Nation and The New Republic, but because this presidential marketing over generations has sunk in.
John Brabender, the Republican media consultant, is still with us. He's on the line from Washington, D.C. John, Are candidates nervous about authorizing ads which in any way differ from what they regard as the norm? We were talking a little earlier about why so many people think the ads are just plain boring. Elizabeth just called in to say she liked Move On's ads. She thought they were engaging and humorous. Why aren't there more engaging and humorous ads?
Well, there's no doubt about that. Candidates oftentimes live in fear of what could go wrong. And, you know, I'm always surprised. I'm often retained by a client who says, geez, I really like the fact that you do breakthrough commercials. And then you show them the breakthrough ideas you have for them, and all of a sudden, that's not the ad they want. They want, you know, the standard, them with a hard hat pointing at a steel beam so that everybody thinks they're good at jobs, which we know those type of ads don't cut through the clutter. So there is sort of this fear, is it going to backfire against me? And because of that, there's a tendency to run way too vanilla of commercials.
Adam Hanft, the first call we took on the show was from somebody who said he wanted there to be more specifics in ads. He wanted more detail. But it seems to me, watching these ads, that they're not really about specifics or detail at all. They are about creating an image, creating a mood, creating a sort of an emotional reaction to a man and what he stands for.
I think that's true, but I also think that there is an opportunity for political advertising, political marketing, to be more informational by using the internet and tying in messages. So I don't understand why we're not seeing more commercials that say, do you want more information about my health care plan, about how I'm going to create jobs? Go to the Kerry website and click here. Cross-platform integration, as we call it, is happening in the consumer marketing space. I don't see why it's happening, not happening here. This is a season where people want information. People have called it the summer of the documentary. More than half of all Americans have seen or plan to see Fahrenheit 9/11. There's a hunger for information, and I don't think either party is doing a good job of taking the 30-second commercial, which has natural limitations, and linking it to the web where a larger story can be told.
Steve's on the line from Greensboro, North Carolina. Steve, what do you want from a campaign ad?
Well, for me, I feel like I'm just not seeing a lot of difference between the two candidates, and you guys were talking earlier about the low voter turnout, and it seems like to me that could definitely be sort of connected to the idea of the lesser of two evils that we have to choose from, and Kerry selling the message that he's just not Bush, and that's kind of what we're getting, but when it comes down to the issues, I'm not really seeing any specific information about what his issues are other than he's just not this guy. He's not the guy that all these people seem to hate.
Do you think that if you did see an ad which was more like the kind of thing you're describing, that it could actually affect the way you voted?
Well, I feel like I would know more about who I'm voting for, and I would actually know what this, you know, the idea of the candidate as a product, what this product is, as opposed to they're just not the other product.
Okay, thanks, Steve. Pacey Markman, is there a significant difference, do you think, this year in the way in which campaign ads are being used and framed from previous campaigns?
Well, I think that there are three differences. One, the advertising started much earlier than it has in previous years. We were on the air in November in battleground states. So I think that's it. The amount of money being spent is much more, though that goes up every year. And the number of people targeted is much fewer. So that's the marketplace that we're in. Beyond that, I'd like to think that the ads we're doing are different. And, what Adam is talking about, what John is talking about, is that people are turned off by mediocre and bad advertising. One of the realities of politics is that people tend to vote for candidates they like. And I would argue that people liked George Bush more than they liked Al Gore, even though, I could also argue that Gore won the election. But likability is very important. And I think that holds true in advertising. When I did ads for products, I wanted to do ads that people liked. And now that I'm doing advertising in the political arena, I still want to do ads that people like. At the end of the ad, I don't want people to be angry at me. I want them to like what they've seen, even if it may make them a little angry or make them sad, or whatever the emotion is that I've sparked in them. I think likability is really important.
But what strikes me is that, I've heard what you say from many other people in the business, but what voters say, if you ask them, is that they want detail, they want specifics, they want to know what a guy stands for, what he proposes to do on specific issues. There just seems to be a gap between what you say they want and what they say they want.
Well, I want to disagree. I don't want to argue with a voter who's saying that this is what they want. But here's what we've discovered. You go and you ask people what they want, and we always hear, I want information, and I want footnotes, and I want to know exactly what's going on. And then you go out and you actually run an ad and test its effectiveness. And I'll tell you, especially in this last cycle, what we're learning is that the ads that we're doing that are strictly emotional, that are not loaded up with a lot of facts, do a lot better than the ads we've done, which are loaded up with a lot of facts. It's just the way it works.
I think that's true. I think a campaign is also a complex instrument with many moving parts. And I think that combination or blend of stronger, image-driven communication with the right manipulation of information is probably the most effective path. I think consumers want the illusion of facts. They want the illusion of information. But if you give them too much, their eyes glaze over. So part of what has to be done is the artful presentation of superficiality.
Let's hear from Rebecca, who's calling from Raleigh, North Carolina. Rebecca, hello.
Hi, how are y'all?
Fine, thanks. Go ahead.
Well, I asked about people who changed their vote because of ads, and I have done that. But generally, it's been seeing a negative ad and not voting for a person because the ad just turned me off so much.
But you would have voted for that guy if you hadn't seen the ad?
Sometimes, yeah. Usually it's local elections, mm-hmm. and primaries and stuff, where there's several people from the same party fighting it out. And, a negative ad will make me turn away from that person.
So you are doing exactly the opposite thing from what the people who made the ad wanted you to do.
Right. I'd like to think I'm a savvy consumer, but, I don't like the negativity. I don't like the way that elections go these days.
And what about the ads in this current campaign? What do you make of them?
My mind's pretty much made up, and I just try to ignore them. When I see ads for the candidate I don't like, I usually end up scoffing because, I just see the...
Okay, well, you're not one of the 3 to 5% undecideds, then, I guess.
No, I'm afraid not.
All right, Rebecca, thanks for that. John Brabender, is that a significant risk, that if you put out a negative ad, you actually turn people against your candidate and they end up doing exactly the opposite thing from what you want them to do?
Without a doubt, we're seeing significant pushback from if you run the wrong kind of negative. If it's the typical throw up a bad picture of the opponent, throw up as many negatives as you can about them, people actually have got to the point where they find that offensive, and it can be worked against the candidate who's running that ad.
So the line then between a bad negative ad and a good negative ad, how do you draw that line?
Well, there's a number of factors. I think people look for, number one, is it seem personal, like a personal attack, or is it actually relevant to the position that's being sought? Number two, is it documented? Number three, what is the tone of the ad? Is it done in a reflective way, or is it done in a hard-hitting way? And finally, I think that they also look at the timing. Is it give them time to check this out, or is the timing make it suspect? Mm.
Adam, there's one negative ad there's been a lot of discussion about just over the last few days, the anti-Kerry ad put out by Swift Boast Veterans for the Truth, I think they're called, which casts doubts on his Vietnam War record. Probably the most negative ad so far in this campaign.
Yes, and it's using a third party has taken a shot at Kerry through that mechanism, and I think it's a big mistake. I don't know if the Republicans have the ability to stop it, but they certainly have the ability to say that it was the wrong thing to do, and they dropped the ball by not saying that. Look, I think American culture loves negativity. I mean, we watch American Idol because we want to hear what Simon has to say and the fun with which he says it. I think when it crosses the line into mean-spirited, there is a risk, but people love to watch Jon Stewart, Leno Letterman. In a way, their monologues are a form of negative campaigning, but it's done with humor and wit and cultural relevance. I think a lot of what's wrong with negative advertising, or comparative advertising, as it's euphemistically called, is that it doesn't have enough cultural relevance and enough kind of irony for this kind of postmodern viewer who's very sophisticated and doesn't want to look at the same old bad pictures with supers over it that they've seen for the last 20 years.
Have you seen any ads so far in this campaign, in campaign 2004, which you think will stick in your mind, will stick in voters' minds in the same way as perhaps the Johnson-Daisy ad?
Well, so far in neglected New York, which everybody is not paying any attention to, where I guess
you haven't seen any ads.
No, we haven't really seen anything interesting here, though. I'm going to make sure I go on the internet and see what Pacey has done for MoveOn.
Pacey, I know if I ask you the same question, you'll nominate some of your own ads. But putting your own predilections to one side, any great ads so far this campaign?
No, not great ones. But I think that there have been lots of good ones. I think the early Bush attacks on Kerry were very well crafted ads, and I think that some of the Kerry ads done right after the. By around May and June, I thought were pretty good and worked really well for him.
And I guess, John Brabender, the reality is that in the coming months, for those voters who live in swing states, at least they are going to see more and more and more of these ads because, as far as the polls are to be believed, everything's still to play for.
Oh, I think that's true. And what we've decided as an industry is that instead of improving our ads, let's just take the bad ones and run them more often and see if we can beat people in the submission, basically. I mean, unfortunately, there are going to be just a handful of states that ultimately are going to be the targets, and the abundance of TV commercials they're going to see is going to be overwhelming.
Adam Hanft, is there anything out there that could change this? Is there anything out there that could raise the level of campaign ads?
Probably not. I think what we're seeing is a move away from broad national advertising, clearly, into much more targeted messaging in the swing states. And that's not just advertising, but massive direct mail efforts that are underway using Voter Vault, which is the Republican database, and Demzilla, which is the Democratic database, where there are 200 million names that could be cut and pasted in a variety of ways to relate to the individual who's getting the message. So I think we're going to be seeing much more stealth, kind of below-the-radar messaging using the Internet as well. And national campaigning seems to be going the other way.
Pacey, if you all stopped what you were doing today and didn't make a single campaign ad between now and November the 2nd, what effect would that have on the race?
Well, I think that I don't know whether it would affect who wins or who loses, but it would affect the amount that a person wins by. I really think that advertising does have an effect.
Okay. My thanks to all my guests this hour. Pacey Markman, his firm Zimmerman & Markman, are creating political ads this year for MoveOn. Adam Hanft, marketing specialist, whose clients include AT&T Wireless and Hertz. We also spoke to John Brabender, Republican media consultant, who's producing campaign aids for Senate races in Illinois, Louisiana, and Oklahoma. The Connection is produced by Nancy Cohen, Jennifer Ehrlich, Catherine Fenollosa, Kelly Jones, Arit Karitsky-Fox, Jen Matson, Virginia Prescott, Christina Russo, and Doug Shugarts. Tara Murphy is our senior producer. I'm Robin Lustig, in for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.